Well, thank you, Mr. Klein. And I'd like to thank Mr. Randall for the first message and also our song leader there. I don't think people have thanked him enough yet, so I'll boost his ego a little bit more. Nice job, Cody. I'd like to welcome everyone, all those who are here, those who are listening online, I hope that the others can be here with us again next week. Now, I think that most of us can remember a time in at least one of our classes in school, whether high school or college or wherever it may be, when our instructor would be talking about something that people just found either uninteresting or too complicated or seemingly unrelated to the rest of the class material or anything that anyone is interested in. And we can also likely remember at some point someone raising a hand and saying, will this be on the test? And maybe some of you asked that yourselves. Or I heard of a teacher in the group here who said that he was on the receiving end of questions like that sometimes. Now, the implication was that if we weren't going to be tested on it, we wouldn't take notes or pay as much attention because it didn't matter and it won't affect our grades. So we just kind of take a little cat nap there with our eyes open. But now the instructor, if that question was asked, might give a definite yes or no answer, but possibly and quite probably he would give a more vague response such as, it might be important for you to know something about it. Not saying for sure whether it would or would not be on the test, whether you would have to know or not. But now, imagine if the same instructor went on to give further explanation about the tests that they were talking about, because this one was going to be much different than any other exams people had ever taken or any other exams the instructor had given. What if the instructor had gone on to say, you're free to try to copy your neighbor's answers. And in fact, I encourage you to do that. So it's not cheating to look at someone else's paper. But every one of you has a slightly different version of the test. So number three on your test won't be the same as number three on your neighbor's test. So just be careful if you're going to copy. There may be some of the same questions among all these tests, but many questions will be different. And then what if he said, if you are having a problem with one of your questions, I encourage you to look around for others who have that same question and are willing to help you with it. Feel free to go over and discuss it with that person. And then he'd say, this is going to be a take-home test. Now, I used to think that would be, oh, that's a piece of cake, but take-home tests I had were tons of work. I didn't like them at all. This would be a take-home test, and there is a due date, but I won't tell you what that date is because it's different for every one of you. And you won't necessarily know your due date until I call on you and ask you to turn in your exam. Furthermore, just want to mention this class is required for your graduation, and you must pass this test to pass the class. Now, I'll give you regular reminders throughout the remainder of the term to motivate you to keep on working on it. What kind of reaction would people have to something like that? I think maybe some would look over the exam, figure they knew as much as they needed to know about it, and would set it aside since it wasn't due right away. They'd just put it off. Some people might look for ways to drop the class or get out of the assignment entirely. Some might be eager to dig into it at first. They'd skip the questions they thought they knew and determine that the others were too hard to work on now and just mentally say, well, I'll think about the other ones later. Some might pick one or two of them to start working on right away. And they'd kind of budget their time and schedule it out, say, I'm going to work on this one on this date and so on. And then some might use the reminders to review their progress and set goals to accomplish before the next reminder. Is that starting to sound familiar at all? Now, that was in school. In the long run, the specific topic or question didn't really matter too much in our later lives, at least for a lot of those tests. But what about our lives today? We're also preparing for whatever tests God may put us through in our lifetimes. We don't always know ahead of time what tests or trials may come about. We may have some advance warning about them. But we do know that we will still have them in some form anyway. And just as in the school example, not everyone is given the same test questions. So none of us are given the same experience or tests in our lives. But we should seek help from others if needed and offer it if we can. If we find someone who has the same test that this person is working on, it's a good practice to talk to that person about it and share your information with him or her. And also, we are given periodic reminders about it every year during the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread that we just went through recently. That is one opportunity we have to check on our progress. Now, the title of this message is, Will This Be on the Test? And the answer, of course, varies by individual and situation. We don't necessarily know the specific tests we'll face, but God does offer some general examples in the Bible. And in this message, I'll briefly consider some of those because he gives some clues as to what areas of life he might test us on. And there are several of them. Not all of them apply to everyone, and some may apply to all of us. You may be wondering, how did I come up with this topic? Well, it came from a passage in the book of Judges, and it's in Judges chapter 2, starting in verse 20. I'll be reading through chapter 3, verse 4. So starting Judges 2, 20. Then the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, Because this nation has transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and has not heeded my voice, I also will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died. In verse 22, so that through them I may test Israel, whether they will keep the ways of the Lord to walk in them as their fathers kept them, or not. Therefore, the Lord left those nations without driving them out immediately, nor did he deliver them into the hand of Joshua. It maybe sounds a little cruel for God to do this to them, but he knew he had to know, and they had to know how they would react when being tested by war. Going on in chapter 3, now these are the nations which the Lord left, that he might test Israel by them. That is, all who had not known any of the wars in Canaan. This was only so that the generations of the children of Israel might be taught to know war, at least those who had not formerly known it. And he goes on to list the nations that he left. And then in chapter or verse 4, and they were left that he might test Israel by them to know whether they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he had commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. If people didn't know about war, didn't actually go through it, it sometimes tends to be glamorized in our minds, and they think, well, God will be with us. It'll be no problem. We'll just go through it. We don't have to worry about anything in life. But that isn't the case. We know that war isn't glamorous for anyone, but they had to find that out. Now, this section of Scripture led me to look into the various ways that God tests people and to see how people reacted to them. What are some of the types of tests that we might expect? In this message, I'll just look at four of them. Look at faith. Our faith may be tested. Endurance is another thing that's tested. Will we last? Humility. That was brought up a little bit in the first message. And I'll touch on patience, because that fits in with almost anything. We've heard messages about each of these, going into more detail than I can cover in the time I have, but it's always a good practice to review them and ask ourselves how we're doing. The first general aspect I'll mention is faith. It's number one, faith. It's something we all need, and we've all demonstrated over the years we've been in the church. A classic biblical example of faith is shown in the book and in the life of Daniel. He went through so much. I'll be going through the book of Daniel, or part of the book, starting in Daniel 1, verses 1 through 7. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. And mentions some of the articles of the house of God and so on. In verse 3, then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants, some of the nobles, and so on in verse 5, and the king appointed for them, these people he chose, a daily provision of the king's delicacies, all his fine, rich food, and some of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. So his way of training them was to give them all these rich foods, give them in abundance. And verse 6, now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave the names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, and then Meshach and Abednego were the names he gave to the other ones. So the first test that Daniel faced and these others were the tests of these rich foods and wine. I'm sure this print wasn't as small when I printed it out, but somehow during Tom's message it got smaller. So, verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. And in verse 12, here's what he requests. He's not going to eat this rich food. Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this manner and tested them 10 days. And we know how that came out. They looked much better, much healthier than all these others who had ate the rich foods. So that was one of the tests of faith that Daniel had to go through. In chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, it talks about Nebuchadnezzar's dreams. It says, now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, sorcerers, Chaldeans, to tell the king his dreams. None of them could do it. So he threatened them. He said in verse 5, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces and your houses shall be made an ash heap. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, Tell me the dream and its interpretation. Well, the wise men, the king's wise men, couldn't tell them. Of course, they had no idea what the king might have been dreaming. And for this reason, in verse 12 of Daniel 2, for this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So this decree went out and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. So here was another test of faith that Daniel had to go through, Daniel and the others with him. In verse 16 of Daniel 2, Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning the secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision, so Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So later in that chapter, in verses 40 through 49, Daniel explained the dreams and its interpretation, and he was actually promoted. He and his companions were saved. In Daniel 3, another test. Daniel and his two friends were cast into the fiery furnace because they would not worship the false gods. And the penalty for not worshiping these false gods was this fiery furnace. That didn't matter. Well, I'm sure it did matter to Daniel. I'm sure he and they had anxious thoughts about it, but still they had the faith to not worship the false gods. And so they survived the fiery furnace. There was the handwriting on the wall, Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. And no one could explain that, but Daniel did. Daniel explained it to them. It was a miracle. Daniel continued to worship the true God and was cast into the lion's den. That was a big thing. I mean, just looking at the lions, he knew what would happen, what likely would happen to anyone going in there. But still, if that's what was required of him, that's what he would do. He had the faith. It even says that the king fasted that night out of concern for Daniel. So Daniel had won the respect of the king. And we know that he was spared. It says in verse 16 and 17, this is in Daniel 6:16 and 17. The king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." And that's what happened. Even the king knew that God would save Daniel. The book continues from there. Daniel continues to reveal prophecies. And throughout the book, no matter what dangers he faced, he remained faithful to God. His faith was tested throughout the whole book. What about us? How will we respond to whatever tests of faith we may face? That's something that I will say would definitely be on the test, in varying degrees anyway, for each of us. And it would be helpful for us to know, study about faith. A second factor that might be tested is endurance. First one was faith. The second one is endurance. Will we stick it out no matter what happens to us? One of the best examples of endurance is given by Paul, and a summary of some of the things he suffered is provided in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 22 through 33. 2 Corinthians 11, 22 through 33. It starts out, "Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, he had been whipped many times. In prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. That was the maximum they could legally give them, because they felt that anything more than that would definitely kill a person. And he went through that 5 times. In verse 25, he says, 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils in the wilderness, in the sea, among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, fastings often, cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. This was his foremost thought. Despite everything that he had to go through, he was thinking about the church. He says in verse 29, who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? So he's saying he's concerned for what happens to others as well. Paul endured much more than many of us will ever face. I don't think any of us will face everything that he did. But we have brethren in other parts of the world who often must endure much more than we can imagine just to attend services, if they're available, or to observe religious practices that differ from the majority religions of their nations. And we hear every once in a while about some of these people. For the most part, we don't really know personally what they go through. But we know that they don't all have it as easy as we do. Have we faced or will we face a similar test of endurance in our lifetimes? It's quite possible and likely that that will be on the test. And it would be helpful for us to know and study about it. The third one, talk about humility. Now, Tom touched on this with Lucifer, who expressed the exact opposite of humility. Humility itself can be a challenge. We all seek what I'll call the good life. We do want to be comfortable. We do want good food to eat. We want to be safe and get together with people and have good times. And God can be extremely generous with his blessings. He has been. We don't earn these blessings, but we very willingly accept them. We may sometimes tend to give ourselves credit, which rightly belongs to God, because everything we have comes from God ultimately. The results of a lack of humility, we can see an example of that in Numbers 12, and this is the example of Aaron and Miriam claiming to be as important as Moses. So they were showing a lack of humility. Numbers 12, starting in verse 1, then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman, and I think maybe this was just a trigger that started something that they had been feeling anyway, a little bit of jealousy. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. Suddenly in verse 4, the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting. So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam And they both went forward, and he said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream." That's how he usually speaks to his prophets. Verse 7, "Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And it says, "The anger of the Lord was aroused against them. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. Moses cried out in verse 13, cried out to the Lord, saying, 'Please heal her, O God, I pray.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'If her father had but spit in her face, would she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterwards she may be received again.'" So he was going to heal her, but she had to be isolated for 7 days. Verse 15, "So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran." So I think you can be very assured that neither Miriam or Aaron would dare speak against Moses or compare themselves to Moses after that point. Humility is very important to God, and it's quite possible that we'll be tested on our humility in some way. It would be helpful for us to know about that. What about patience? Now, I'll only briefly discuss patience by considering the examples of the several barren women who are mentioned in the Bible. Why were so many of them mentioned? Why were they barren? In particular, we know of Abraham and Sarah. They wanted to have children and couldn't. His son Isaac and Rebekah, they also couldn't have children together. And Isaac's son Jacob and Rachel. That's three generations in that one family. And we could also consider Hannah, who was the mother of Samuel. You can read about that in 1 Samuel 1. And we could read about Samson's mother. She's not named, but she was the wife of Manoah. It talks about her in Judges 13. What a painful trial it must have been for each of these families. And I'm sure they went through a lot of agony and worry and self-examination because of it. And it was a true test of their patience, but it was also a major test of their faith. So those are some examples, some categories of things that we may be tested on. But why do we need to be tested at all? There are several reasons. I have six reasons that I'll mention. Why do we need to be tested? The first reason is to prove to God and ourselves that our faith is real. God already knows of our faith, and he knows whether it's real. But by testing it, it helps us prove to ourselves that we can endure. It gives us the self-confidence we need to withstand whatever trials come upon us, because we are strengthened with every trial that we face and every trial that we work through. God knows his plan for us, and he knows how to prepare us for that plan. So that was the first reason, to prove to God and ourselves that our faith is real. A second reason, to know what is in our heart. Let's consider Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. Deuteronomy 8, chapter 1. "Every commandment which I command you today you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers." Verse 2, "And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. And in Proverbs 17:3, just a short verse, Proverbs 17:3 says, the refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord tests the hearts. So we're tested to know what is in our heart. The third reason is to build endurance. James 1:12-15. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. So we are tempted so that we can build endurance to withstand stronger and stronger challenges. That's a third reason, to build endurance. A fourth reason, to teach us how to test all things. To teach us how to test all things. 1 Thessalonians 15:16-22. It sounds like a long section, but these are very short verses. 1 Thessalonians 15:16-22. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the spirit. Do not despise prophecies. Test all things. Hold fast what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. He says in verse 21, test all things. Hold fast what is good. So he tests us to teach us how to test. A fifth reason, to help us examine ourselves. We've read this recently, 2 Corinthians 13:5-6. Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Christ, Jesus Christ is in you? Unless indeed you are disqualified, but I trust that you will know that we are not disqualified. So we're tested to help us examine ourselves. And a sixth reason, to help us receive the blessings he wants to give us. He wants to bless us. He wants to bless us in ways and an abundance that we can't even imagine. Malachi 3:10-12. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. Are you ready for that? God wants to give it to us. So I'll just reiterate these six reasons that I gave for why we are tested. One was to prove to God and ourselves that our faith is real. The second one was to know what is in our heart. The third one was to build endurance. The fourth one, to teach us how to test all things. The fifth one, to help us examine ourselves. And the sixth one, to help us receive the blessings he wants to give us. It can be very difficult for us to go through the testing that I described at the beginning of this message. There are so many variables and unknowns, and so much uncertainty, and so much that we may feel that we are incapable of. But God knows our limits. He knows what we need and what we lack. He knows how our own tests and trials can be used not only on our behalf, but also on the behalf of others who may face the same situations and times to come. Did you ever consider that you may be tested so that you can help someone else later with that same issue? And most importantly, God knows what our role will be in his kingdom, and he is preparing us for that time to come.